evening, listeners, and this is EBC Radio 1170 AM, and you are listening to Traffic Jam, and I am your host, Alka. As every Wednesday and Friday, we have been doing the series called South Asians Managing Diabetes During the COVID-19 Pandemic. Today is our seventh show of this series called South Asians Managing Diabetes During the COVID-19 Pandemic. Our last show will be on Wednesday, July 15th. Sadly, I have to say that. But we have been doing radio segments for National Diabetes Month in November. So I'm hoping in November, Ms. Shalija, her team will come back on EBC. So again, I want to welcome Shalija Mathur. She is a South Asian registered dietitian from the Department of Family and Community Health Sciences from Rutgers Cooperative Extension. For the last 20 years, on behalf of Rutgers University, Shalija has provided many community nutrition programs addressing nutrition, health, and wellness issues. Her area of particular interest is diabetes management and prevention. She's also very active on Twitter, and you can follow her at RDNS Mathur if you want to learn more about these topics. So Shalija, I welcome you on EBC Radio. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Alkaji. Thank you. Good evening to all listeners of EBC Radio. Aap sabko mera namaskar. I bring you greetings from Rutgers Cooperative Extension on this very, very wet and windy Friday. Ekdam kagaz ki kashti aur barish ka mausam ho raha hai yahan pe.
Bilkul.
And I just wanted to thank all the listeners who have been tuning in every week, and those of you who have liked and subscribed to the YouTube video. Pehla to thank you, Alka ji, for inviting us to the studios every year. And I also want to thank members of our Rutgers team, Dr. Suchismita Datta from the Institute for Quantitative Biomedicine and Dr. Nurgul Fitzgerald from the Department of Nutritional Sciences. Our coordinator for this project is Renu Advani, and she manages a lot of the groundwork for this project. I'm also very grateful to our team of trained South Asian peer leaders. Or in sabke behalf pe, I would like to acknowledge and thank the funders from the Office of Minority and Multicultural Health for their support in addressing issues of health disparities and inequities in the South Asian communities across New Jersey.
Very well said, Shalija. For today's show, can you share some of the resources you and your team are creating for the South Asian population and how listeners can find them?
Of course. So as part of this project on diabetes in South Asia, Dr. Datta and I have been creating short videos or vignettes on nutrition topics that are relevant to our communities. And our South Asian peer leaders and all our participants have actually been providing very good feedback, and they have been helping us select these topics. And so if you go on YouTube and search for Shalija Dietitian, which is my first name, Shalija, and Dietitian, you will find these videos in the Dietitian's Corner. So do not forget to subscribe so that as we add new videos, you can be notified. You can also provide us feedback and other topics that you are interested in. And the best way to reach us will be by emailing us at about-diabetes@rutgers.edu.
Again, that email is about-diabetes@rutgers.edu. Very nice, Shalija. Now, this is very, very important work and much needed for our community. If anyone is interested in attending the diabetes workshop series, how can they register?
Oh, this is a great question, Alka ji. Pichle hafte hi we have finished the last group of workshop series. Mm-hmm. So we are currently recruiting for the next workshop series, which begins on August 11th. And this one is also going to be completely online because of the pandemic. And there are 12 two-hour sessions that are held twice a week. And this is being offered to South Asians living with diabetes or pre-diabetes. So anyone with roots from India or Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Nepal, Bhutan, Bangladesh, and the Maldives can join this group. And, you know, we only have a very few seats left at this point. So if you're interested in registering, please email us at about-diabetes@rutgers.edu and someone will contact you.
Well, that's very great, listener. This is EBC Radio and you are listening to the series called South Asians Managing Diabetes during the COVID-19 pandemic. And we have Shailja Mathur with us today and we will be having another guest soon. So this is great information, Shailja. So now can you please introduce our second guest in the studio today?
Yes. And before I do that, I wanted to share with the listeners that July is recognized as the National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. This was created in 2008 to bring awareness to the very unique struggles that underrepresented groups face regarding mental health that are living in the United States. So there are many mental health issues like obsessive compulsive disorders, suicide, depression, substance abuse, drinking, that are plaguing our South Asian community. Sadly, the stigma around them does not allow us to have a conversation and seek support. Do not know that depression is now, you know, accepted as a part of the large umbrella of conditions that affects a person that is living with diabetes, just like heart disease or blood pressure. And sadly, the burden of diabetes is very high, both for the person living with it and the friends and family around them. Mm-hmm. So a person living with diabetes needs help and support, and they are dealing with a chronic condition most of their waking hours. And so let's discuss some of these challenges with our expert on the air today. I'm very honored to welcome Dr. Makhija. Dr. Vasudev Makhija is a trained psychiatrist, and he's the founder and director of the South Asian Mental Health Initiative and Network, which is better known as SAMHEIN. SAMHEIN is devoted to addressing mental health issues of the South Asians living in the United States. You can find a lot of information at SAMHEIN.org, which is SAMHIN.org. And you could also follow them on Twitter at SAMHEIN.org, which is one word here. So welcome, Dr. Makhija. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, Dr. Makhija.
Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Makhija, it's my privilege and honor on behalf of EBC Radio, especially on National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, to welcome you on EBC Radio and have you on our radio station. It's really a privilege. So how are you doing today?
I am doing great. Thank you.
All right. So you are the founder and president of the South Asian Mental Health Initiative and Network. So tell us a little about the programs that you are running as part of this organization, and also how can someone volunteer with SAMHEIN?
Okay. First of all, let me thank you, Alkaji and Shailja Mathur and EBC Radio for having me as a guest. I consider that an honor, and I think it's a very timely and very important way of us to connect with your audience and our community. So SAMHEIN has a lot of programs, and I'll tell you some of them. We run two weekly support groups at this time. One is Janani, which is a weekly support group for anyone who has lost someone to suicide. It meets on Monday evenings. And the second one is South Asian Alcoholic Anonymous, or AA, weekly meetings for anyone with a drinking problem and a desire to quit. And both the groups are currently being offered online virtually during the pandemic. SAMHEIN has also developed a South Asian Mental Health Provider Directory, which is a free online database of South Asian providers. So if you want to search someone by a particular language like Gujarati, Telugu, or any of the other South Asian languages, you can find the provider that speaks that language. You can search by specialty, zip code, and other parameters. We also conduct outreach events providing mental health screenings. Besides screenings, the SAMHEIN team of mental health professionals provide education, support, guidance, referrals, and address stigma. And of course, right now, the outreach events are not there, but we are working on online alternatives to that. Someone has made available online many educational resources, and some of these are available in different South Asian languages, and they're all free. And a psychotherapist from Samhin helps to run a support group at Manvi Shelter Ashiana for women who are victims of domestic violence. We've also launched a helpline, and people can reach us via text, phone, or email with any questions or queries or when they need assistance. We provide support, education, guidance, and help find culturally competent mental health clinician available in their area. Our team helps the families navigate the mental health system, which can be quite a challenge sometimes, by connecting them with the local resources.
This is great information, Dr. Makhija. I mean, there's a lot that you have on your website. And I have a question regarding, you know, some of the questions that I get when I teach in the community. You know, often people ask about drinking and how much can a person living with diabetes drink. Drinking has over the years gained so much popularity, and you know, often alcohol needs to be disallowed with certain medications, and that is true with diabetes medications also. But can you help our listeners understand what is considered normal drinking, or if there is anything like normal drinking, and when does this become a problem drinking, or what we now call alcohol use disorder?
In our society, social drinking or recreational drinking is considered acceptable. And social drinking involves drinking in company of others. The focus is supposed to be on social interaction and not the alcohol. But often, the alcohol serves as a social lubricant. But what happens in some situations, especially among the youth and college campuses, drinking becomes a primary activity. There have been many deaths on college campuses across the country due to alcohol poisoning. This includes deaths of some Indians and other South Asian students. When we are not facing the pandemic, Friday evening happy hours become the oasis of drinking for the young, successful professionals. They indulge in excessive drinking. Often these professionals regret participating in drinking in such events, but find that they are compelled to attend because they don't want to feel left out. They want to be able to network for professional growth. Some end up evaluating the price that they are paying for this. Some become alcoholics. You know, alcohol may make the night glittery and fun, but they ruin the mornings. Some people drink to quiet their tension, or because they are lonely, or because of boredom. And in time, the stress reducer becomes the cause of the stress. Normal drink for some can become a slippery slope. The normal drinking can transition into problem drinking without the person realizing. The family may start noticing signs, for example, the person starts drinking in the morning or comes home drunk or doesn't fulfill the normal roles as a husband or a wife or a father. They may miss work because of hangovers. And they want to drink more and more because they develop tolerance to the effect of the alcohol. They start ignoring their responsibilities. They become irritable and angry. Sometimes they may become violent and aggressive. Whenever they try to stop, they have significant withdrawal symptoms like shakes, nervousness, sweating, and sometimes even convulsions. And these are the signs that the person has drinking problem. According to NIH, in men, drinking more than 4 drinks in a single day or 14 drinks in a week is considered at-risk drinking. And in women, that is 3 drinks in a day and more than 7 drinks in a week is considered at-risk drinking. At-risk means the person is at risk for becoming a problem drinker. Besides the drinking problem, the genetic vulnerability increases the likelihood of someone becoming an alcoholic. Underlying psychological problems may also make them prone to becoming alcoholics. According to a study published last year in Lancet, there is no safe level of drinking. Even 1 drink per day increases the risk of developing most of the health problems associated with alcohol. Some of these include tuberculosis, chronic conditions like diabetes, cancer, accidents, self-harm. You asked about diabetes. I mean, alcohol is known to increase the risk of diabetes. It affects the insulin metabolism. It affects the liver, which metabolizes the medications that regulate the diabetes. It also can affect the individual's ability to care for oneself and not take the medications or not pay attention to the diet or miss appointments. It is also a commonly held belief that one drink a day, especially red wine, can be good for your heart. This recent study suggests that on the whole, benefits of abstaining actually outweigh the loss of any health improvements that such drinking can offer. The study also concluded that alcohol consumption is involved in 2.8 million deaths annually worldwide, making it the seventh leading risk factor for death and disability. Alcohol use disorder is the official term used to diagnose people with drinking problems. This can be mild, moderate, or severe. Prior to 2013, alcohol dependence and alcohol abuse were the terms used officially. In 2013, American Psychiatric Association published the DSM-5, which combined the two into one diagnosis of alcohol use disorder.
Oh, my God, Dr. Makija, such a great information, and I hope listeners who are listening, and if you drink occasionally, please keep it to occasionally only, because if you become a daily drinker, how many problems can lead to it? So, Doctor, now, if someone has a drinking problem, are there any support groups that they join?
Yes, before I answer that, I wanted to add something that you had asked earlier, which I forgot, about the volunteer opportunities. How do people apply for volunteering? We have many volunteer opportunities. Volunteers find their work with someone very gratifying. They can apply by filling out a volunteer application online on someone.org. And someone from our team will contact you. So now we are very fortunate to live in times when there are many options available to help those with drinking problems. There are medications available that can help with cravings and to help to decrease the risk of relapse. There are medications to improve the chance of abstinence. Psychotherapy, which is a talk therapy, can also help, especially when there are underlying psychiatric problems like anxiety, depression, and so on. In addition, Alcoholic Anonymous, or AA, meetings have proven to be an effective tool in recovery from drinking problems. One can find AA meetings practically in every town in this country and practically every country. In fact, they are even available on cruise ships nowadays. However, at least half of the struggling South Asians don't attend these meetings because they feel culturally out of place. In 2015, recognizing this, Samin launched the South Asian AA meetings.
Wow, that is great. So we have a few of these going on in New Jersey at this time. So listeners, if you know somebody who can benefit from these, please contact or look on the internet at samin.org for more information. And I'm going to deviate a little bit to another topic. Dr. Makija, what is your observation about depression in members of the South Asian community who are living with, you know, chronic conditions such as diabetes, heart disease, and, you know, which is very common in our community? So what has been your observation in your practice?
You're right. It is very common. And patients with type 2 diabetes are twice as likely to experience depression as the general population. And those with depression and diabetes have greater difficulty in taking care of themselves. For example, watching their diet, monitoring blood sugar, exercising. They might forget or skip the medication and have difficulty keeping appointments with their doctor. A Canadian study recently published found that South Asians who are at high risk for type 2 diabetes have higher level of depressive symptoms than their white counterparts. And in patients who are depressed, the risk of having a heart attack doubles. Depression increases the risk of death with people with heart disease. And when you treat the symptoms of depression after a heart attack, it has been shown to lower both the risk of dying and also risk of being rehospitalized again and again. So you see, there is a two-way or bi-directional relationship between depression and these two and many other conditions.
So do people who have depression come forward to discuss their concerns or to seek help from you?
Sometimes they do, but often they don't. Unfortunately, stigma associated with mental illness is a significant hindrance to help seeking. In our community, there is also shame associated with seeking help. Depression, instead of being seen as a medical condition, it is often seen as a personal failure or a sign of weakness. Some may see it as a result of their karma and say, what can we do? It's our destiny. And they don't go for the help that's needed, which can help. And I think the treating primary care physician or endocrinologist is in a perfect position to be proactive in asking about the symptoms of depression and encouraging treatment when needed.
Dr. Makija, we are really running out of time, and I would like your one question to ask, and if you can answer in a minute time. Since the COVID-19 pandemic began, what do you see about the mental health of the South Asian community? And also, if you can give a good message to the people who are alcoholic along with that.
I think initially when the COVID hit, everybody was happy. They had the job. They were enjoying spending more time with the family, but the honeymoon is over. And I think we as South Asians are dealing with this impact of COVID just like the rest of the country. I think, but most of them are resilient and dealing with it. But some experience severe anxiety and depression that may warrant seeking professional help. It is important to remember that if you really can't sleep or your appetite is changing, you cannot function, cannot work, cannot take care of your kids, cannot go shopping, or your grades are dropping in college or school, it's a sign that you need professional help. And you can also complete free online screening test called PHQ-9. It's available free online. I mean, you must learn to take care of your body and your mind. Mental health influences your physical health. Be mindful of the impact of alcohol on diabetes and the medications that you're taking with for it. Don't be concerned about what others think when it comes to seeking help for mental health. Seeking help is a sign of strength.
Thank you so much, Dr. Makija, for being on EBC Radio. And now, Shailja, I would like you to announce our next speaker for next week on Wednesday and your last statement on this topic.
Sure. We have learned so much from you today, Dr. Makija. I really like your message that seeking help is a sign of strength. And I think as South Asians, we should not only seek help, but we should also make an effort to have a conversation about mental health issues as it does affect our physical health. And everyone, listeners, if you need more information, don't forget to visit the website, sameen.org. And our next speaker for Wednesday, July 15th, is Dr. Divya Menon. Dr. Menon is a cardiologist, and she specializes in preventive cardiology. Remember to social distance and wear a mask. Do not forget to keep sharing the videos on YouTube.
All right.
And today, as we close the show, I have a special shout-out for a very special person, my collaborator, Dr. Suchi Datta. She's one of the most hardworking, creative, and calm person I have known. And on behalf of our entire team, we wish her a wonderful day and a many, many more happy and healthy birthdays ahead. Thank you, everyone.
Hi, Sushi Datta. And on behalf of EBC Radio and entire team of EBC Radio, wish you a very, very happy birthday and many, many more to come.